This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Man, is there a chill in the air in here? Let's go. Oh, the spelling bee. Nothing better than the spelling bee without volume. Apparently Adam is against training. That's what I've discovered now. Adam doesn't believe. He basically believes that.
I believe an appropriate amount of preparation.
So what do you think, about 3 weeks or so?
In all honesty, when I first started here.
Who trained you in?
I didn't. Nobody trained me in.
Makes sense, doesn't it, Kyle? It all comes together. Okay, so you started when?
I started on my 26th birthday.
Oh, nice.
January 31st.
Yes.
2001.
That's a great day to start on your birthday. Had you wanted to work here for a long, long time?
No, actually, I didn't aspire to work at WCCO Radio.
I dreaded it. It sounds like you're.
I mean, I obviously knew of WCCO Radio.
You had heard of it.
Grew up, the radio was on oftentimes in the morning.
Yep.
But I was working in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and my boss at the time, lovely woman by the name of Chris Willette.
I love her bakery. I mean, it's so good.
She. Actually, they reached out to her about an opening here.
Oh.
And she had just had a child and was living in Eau Claire.
Oh, so in other words, Lindsay, it sounds like a typical man who took advantage of a woman who was facing dual responsibilities. She was working. She was raising a child. So instead of waiting for her to finish with the early part of the child, you jumped in like a vulture. Is that pretty much what you did?
Yep.
What do you think of that, Lindsay?
See, I actually took it the other way, that they wanted the woman over Adam.
They did. That was exactly right.
Yeah. And what did you think of a show idea, by the way, for tomorrow? So, Kyle, we won't say what it is, but Adam suggests an idea, which I like. I think is very funny. And Adam says, hey, Lindsay, what do you think we do? Fill in the blank. And here's what the response was. And then you
which
said,
I'm used
and,
to that.
And then you said again, she goes, okay, how are you going to do it? You know?
I believe it was also, sure, whatever you want.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm just happy he's bringing an idea because I've been throwing things at him and I'm getting the Adam Carter cold shoulder. You're well aware what that is like.
No, Chad. That is not it. This is my problem in life is I'm a horrible gift receiver, and it's the same when people come at me with suggestions.
What are you that has nothing to do with what
it absolutely
talking.
Has everything to do
Kyle,
with.
Kyle, yes or no, it has something to do with when Adam comes
no,
in here.
Has,
we all know. I'm on the verge of saying I love you. You're one of my closest friends, but every other day I'd say you are not paying any attention to any of us.
Right? Because I'm doing multiple jobs often?
Oh, come on.
Seriously, I'm doing it right now. Okay. I won't have any news at 12:08.
Hey, Family Guy doesn't watch itself. Somebody's got to check the clips on YouTube.
Says the guy who plays Candy Crush during important meetings.
We might have to Facebook Live this.
God bless that meeting, but it didn't need 100% of my attention.
Because, and God knows, 75% of the time what I'm saying just goes on and on and on. Who knows? There's a point I'm asking the question, I'm answering it. But I look over at my guy, and he's on there going, whew, look at this platypus right here. Man, Buffalo Wild Wings has a new
checking
sauce.
Checking my points.
And then all of a sudden you go, yeah. I think that makes
whatever
sense.
Whatever you say.
And I just said, Hitler, man, I don't know why I get so much criticism. I don't know why I get so much criticism. So you started. Who was the first? Well, let's get to it here.
All right.
Let's tease it. I want to know the first big WCCO celebrity you met, and then I want to know who was the first WCCO celebrity who gave you the big brush off. You know, just want to, hey, stay away from me, kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the big leagues. This isn't Eau Claire. Don't look me in the eye.
Right.
Because I think there's probably a couple pretty good contenders.
All right.
Here he is, a man who's, I think he's paying attention today. He's got the news. Adam Robert, Carter, and I'm stalling so Kyle can play the music. Excellent guess once again that Lindsay has provided us with today, bottom of the hour, a story about drug prices and the battle that goes on that plays a part in these drug prices continuing to go up and up and up. A writer from the New York Times who wrote about this story recently, Eric Lipton, will join us in about 20 minutes. We're moving Dara up early. So Dara is 1:35 because the president will make his announcement. Seems like all the outlets are saying he's going to exit the Paris Agreement with some caveats. Are the sources all right? We'll find out. If he does, this would be following up on a campaign pledge, something he said over and over again. He has called climate change many times a hoax, which is completely preposterous, by the way. So we'll carry a little bit of the president, and then we'll have a very good guest on the topic at 2:35. So you start here. You're in the news team. I mean, I think it's a bit of Murder's Row at that point. Murph's here. Hagovic is here. Who else is making up the news team at this point?
Telly Mamiac. Eric Escala.
Oh, man.
Jeff McKinney.
Oh, this is.
Laura Oakes.
Wow.
I think that's it. Well, we had part-timers, too. We had Bill Bundy. Bundy here.
Never heard of him.
Bill Bundy. Great pipes.
That's a great name, though.
Bill Bundy.
Yeah.
In fact, he was like working weekend nights as a part-timer, and I remember driving into the cities on a Sunday night,
okay,
and Bill Bundy was doing the news at like 8 o'clock at night, and I'm thinking, this is the weekend night guy?
Yeah.
Big voice, Bill Bundy.
Hello, and, Bill Bundy.
Yes, and yeah. I thought, man, this is...
So were you just coming back to town, or is this when
you... No, this is when I'm moving back to start the job.
And you're thinking, I gotta push Bill Bundy aside?
Yeah.
So what was the shift they hired you for?
I think my first shift was Wednesdays through Sundays.
Okay.
I worked, afternoon news both Saturday and Sunday. And then I think it was like midday reporter first 3 days. But that was part of it. You said who big-timed me maybe when I got here. It's not necessarily a big-timing instance, but what happened was at the same time when I was hired, my hours kind of shifted earlier in the day than the normal reporter. And at the time, Eric Escala, I think, was working mornings because he was a part of the morning show.
Sure.
But what they did is they moved his hours later so he would be later at the Capitol. But our morning show host at the time, Dave Lee, who still is, obviously, I remember he came into the newsroom and approached Steve Murphy about these changing hours, and I think he thought that Escala was being removed from the morning show in favor of this new guy.
You.
The new guy who was sitting right there.
Oh.
Dave was expressing his displeasure at that.
So the Daver was not happy about your hire?
Not specifically, but...
Not sure things have changed, Kyle.
Not happy about that, you know... Taking Eric off.
Yeah.
And what's this other guy coming in?
Right.
And but
did
that
you
wasn't
then step
the case.
Up and say, "Hey, Mr. Lee"?
No, because Steve Murphy was much better at the.
A very diplomatic man.
Super diplomatic.
Yeah.
To a fault. I mean, you get calls in the newsroom.
Oh.
Sometimes when you get a call in the newsroom and you're just not in the mood.
Yeah.
It can get ugly.
Wait, you're not in the mood when sometimes you get a phone call in the newsroom?
But Steve Murphy, bless his heart, would get calls and he's explaining and helpful and. Basically, you resent him because he makes you look bad.
Yeah. In this room right now, because Kyle's filling in.
Or not makes you look bad. He holds the mirror up to you and says,
"Yeah,
you are a bad person.
Here's who you are."
Right.
Kyle's in for Dan today. Dan's off. Amongst the four of us, who is the most patient person in this room?
Oof.
I go with Lindsay. Because she works with you.
There's not even a question. I'm
really?
The most patient. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Well.
I was going to say you. Then
I just had to jump the ship.
This trio over here. Who's
next?
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, there's not much hope
between
the three
next?
Of us.
Yeah,
oh.
Who is the next most patient person?
See, it's tough because you all have your faults, and one of them is that you play patient to the person's face, and then you talk about them behind their back.
That is absolutely not true.
Oh.
That is, I, no. I am rude
really?
To people's face, too.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I can pull up the text messages of all of our passive-aggressive.
Okay. In that category, I'm certainly not eliminating myself. I'm certainly not eliminating Adam. But the guy in the middle belongs on Mount Rushmore by himself.
That is not true.
In that category.
That is absolutely not true.
You may not agree with the perception, because a lot of us don't agree with the perceptions about ourselves, but that is Mount Rushmore. Okay, so was there anybody else who kind of gave you the Heisman? And just
no, everybody's very nice. I can't think of.
How about my father? How long did it take before he actually knew your name?
Well, he knew because of my uncle. So he knew, and actually that.
Unfair advantage.
Yeah.
It is total unfair advantage because he was very nice to me. He, you know, he called me Mr. Bleephole. I mean, that's a common one.
Yeah.
And then how long before my wife, that wife of mine, figures out that I'm a homosexual? I'll just put it that way. That's a standard line, too. And before we get hate calls, it was a different time back then.
Yeah.
But that was part of it.
Apparently, homosexual hating was okay back then.
you know, the old school.
It was like 8 years ago.
But no, I mean, everybody was very nice. I can't think, honestly, I do not think of one person who was, well, Dark was kind of, and by the way, today, I think fifth anniversary in the passing of Dark Star.
5 years ago today.
But he wasn't very nice to me at the start, too.
And you called me. I'm driving up north. You either called me or text me about the Dark Man. You know, we should talk a little Dark.
In fact, I hated his guts is when I first started here.
Because of the way he treated you?
Oh, he was a total jerk to me until I started giving it back, and then he became my favorite person here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're Dark's a handful. There's a lot of, and he's dearly missed. But when this phrase would come up from George, I'll do it for you. When that phrase would come up, I would just encourage all people, it was time to run at that point. Well, let's talk a little
Dark. John Gotti telling you he's doing you a favor.
Yes. Let's talk to TV, come back. We'll remind you about the show because we talked about some of the good guests, but some other items we will get to in moments on CCO. That's a total you're unfamiliar with, Kyle. Just want to let you know. A lot of stuff, but, you know, Adam, we talk often about the discord in America. Hyper-partisan, instead of putting our arms around each other, why do we put our arms around each other than, you know, put a shiv in the back? Would you like another example of that, just kind of where we're at in America today? It's Mr. Met. You know, I mean, it's been...
I say bravo, Mr. Met.
When you think of a goofy-looking, funny-looking, but a mascot that I kind of like, I like Mr. Met.
He's got a baseball for him.
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Met, big, giant, goofy face. Yeah. Baseball, and I mean, you don't get confused who he's with, right? He's Mr. Met.
Mr. Met.
Right? It's not Keith Hernandez. It's not Tom Seaver. It's Mr. Met. And it hasn't been a good year for the Mets, right? There are a lot of expectations. Things haven't been good.
Back to being the Mets.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Casey Stengel will come back. Well, last night, after a loss to the Brewers, one of the Mr. Mets, because apparently this job has so much pressure, so much commitment, one person cannot fulfill all the duties. I don't know if there's three, there's four, but there's more than one person. Here's some comments from the fans. Now, the fans are contending. They said nothing. I'm not a little skeptical.
Baloney.
I'm 100% not believing.
Yeah.
But at some point, Mr. Met, you know what he showed? He showed good flexibility. I mean, he pivoted.
Oh, yeah.
He had that left foot right there. And then the number one extension of your number one.
Right.
The finger. Mr. Met gave the finger.
And I think he's only got three fingers, too. So
does it stand out even more?
I think so.
Yeah.
The best, though, is not only gives a finger, but he gives the old, I don't know what this move is, but it's very New York, you know, like, hey, what are you, right here.
Hey, right here.
But would you expect nothing less from the New York mascot? Now, if T.C. Bear does that.
Why not? I think this is a new area for mascots to approach when, why do they always have to be warm and cuddly? So in other words, I'm allowed at Target Field to say anything and everything to TC Bear, and he's got to just bop his head back and go, okay, that's good, you're a fan. Why can't, you know, TC Bear give me a push me over?
Yeah, I think it's great. Some of the best videos, there are videos of little kids playing Pop Warner football against mascots, and it's fantastic because these mascots just light these kids up.
Wait, it sounds like kind of like the Peyton Manning SNL skit.
Yeah, but it's absolutely real, and I don't know where they've happened because there's one with Goldie Gopher, too.
So wait a second.
It's like a Pop Warner football game, and there's mascots just destroying these
kids. So they're playing hard against these kids.
Oh, yeah, and these mascots, you know, and the kids have the full pads on,
well,
so it's not like they're getting hurt.
Because the Wolves, I think they probably still do this, and it was like fresh the first time they did it. It's not quite as fresh the 19th time they did it. Crunch's birthday. Yeah. They introduce everybody, and they come in and they play. So they play against themselves. But it appears that Kyle is fun.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. It's great.
Okay. So, Kyle, turn the mic on. Describe what you are seeing here.
The first one was the Bronco mascot leapfrogging over the kid. And then I don't know.
They taunt them, these mascots.
Ooh, a sack.
Deck down these kids and they taunt them.
Tyler.
They stand over them.
And then Bolt holds the kid.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
All right. We will need to post this.
The Cincinnati Red mascot there.
Do we know where it's based?
I don't know where this is.
The one had the Broncos end zone, the first one I saw. But these don't look like they're all the same game. Here's at the bank. You're talking about Goldie Gopher.
This is the bank. Bank
this is a compilation of a bunch of them.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, are we having a lot of games that I've missed out on where mascots are playing against young kids and just clotheslining them?
It's the Indianapolis Colts mascot is very vicious, both an offensive and defensive threat.
It's Iron Man.
Because somebody's saying again through a text, halftime Vikings game, mascot game. This isn't a mascot game. The mascots are all together.
Yeah, it's mascots versus
mascots
kids.
There's Goldie. Look at that. Stiff arming. It's fantastic.
Most years go for football.
I think maybe.
Here's the Viking and
Victor Viking.
TC.
Man. All right. Let's post this, Lindsay, and let's just say in honor of Mr. Met.
Yeah,
his nonverbal signal. Here's another example of kind of the vitriol that has been boiling with mascots. So how would it be perceived? Your guy, Nordy. Okay, your guy, who's worthless, by the way. Nordy, Wild are just doing nothing instead of,
banging the drum. He's got the drum, doesn't he?
He's looking at Dubnyk, and he's like, great. Hey, Parisi, earn some of the money. Like, kind of a salty mascot.
That'd be good.
We've occasionally, it's been a while, maybe, you know what today is? It is time to get Goldie Gopher back on the air. It's been a few years since we last talked to Goldie. What do you think about this? Should we call Goldie? I think this is the perfect day to call Goldie. Because we're gonna put the video up there, and Mr. Met gave their, but how are the little kids going to react? If all of a sudden it's Crunch, and you know what Crunch is holding up? 14, and it's like 14 seasons since the team last made the playoffs. So there's another one. One year they advanced past the first round. I mean, do you really want the mascot mocking the team? I mean, I think
the team certainly doesn't. I mean, your broadcasters can't even, make a criticizing comment. You think the mascot's going to get away with it?
Yeah. Well, see, with the Wolves, I'll give Jim Pete credit. Jim Pete will call it that way. Now, does Jim, is he as completely free as he might be in an off-air conversation? No. But among the people in town, who else working games is fairly honest? I think Tom Reed's fairly honest on the analyst side.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bob Kurtz, they're not married, I don't think. Bob Kurtz is pretty honest. But, yeah, I mean, What teams now want is they want people to carry the water, right? And then they want the fans, and a lot of the fans want that too, right? I'll say this. PA gets a lot of heat for how enthusiastic he is. And again, I'm biased because I know him. PA will call out the Vikings during games.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty.
Come on, man. This isn't Detroit.
I think radio is different than TV. I guess only in the sense that the NFL isn't called by local. I mean, obviously, the Wild on TV, that is the worst example of only wanting homers. And I don't think Wild fans want pure homers. Obviously, Wild fans want guys that say, oh, the refs are screwing the Wild. But I think if the Wild are playing bad, Wild fans would be perfectly fine with somebody pointing out that they're playing bad.
But among the groupings in town, LaPanta and Greenlay, to me, it's just unbelievable. I mean, they both obviously know the game, but I mean, there are times when it's just, I mean, I know it drives you nuts. There's too many apologies. There's too many excuses. And sometimes it's just right there in front of you and just stop. I get it. They want the team to win. They're employed by FSN in some association with the team. I get that. You don't want negativity, but it's basically telling you you're not seeing what you're seeing right in front of you. And I would hope more of the audience would want a little bit of, tell me something other than what I can see, and also don't tell me something that's completely contrary to what I'm looking at. 33 past 12. Chad Hartman, Lindsey Gentzel, Adam Carter, and Kyle Sheely in for Dan Cook here on a beautiful Thursday. Pretty intriguing story about a topic that affects, let's be honest, almost all of us. And Eric Lipton, a very accomplished journalist, is one of the co-authors of this story. Drug lobbyist battle cry over prices, blame the others. Eric Lipton with us from New York Times. He's won a Pulitzer Prize a couple times here. Rather remarkable accomplishment, to say the least. 2015, won the Pulitzer Prize for investigative journalism for a series of stories he did examining the explosion of lobbying state attorney generals by corporate interests, and then going back where he previously worked for the Washington Post and Hartford Current, where he won a Pulitzer Prize in explanatory journalism for stories he co-wrote on the flaw with the Hubble Space Telescope. So a very accomplished man. Thank you for your time, sir. I just want to read one part of the story early and get your reaction, then get into some specifics. We're talking about all the people involved in keeping the drug prices where they're at and then just protecting themselves. A civil war has broken out among the most powerful players in the pharmaceutical industry, including brand name and generic drug makers, and even your local pharmacists, with each blaming others for the rising price of medicine. Is it even worse today than it was, let's say, 5-10 years ago? And if it is worse, why is it?
I think that the free-for-all going on among the various sectors of the industry is more intense right now, because they previously felt pretty protected, that there was little chance that there was going to be significant legislation that might be passed, because there just wasn't a sufficient political willpower to go after the pharmaceutical industry. But now, with prices having gone up so much in recent years, and also a big factor is that many people have higher deductibles. So previously they were insulated from seeing the increases in the prices, and now with higher deductibles, they're often actually having to pay a really large bill for the higher priced pharmaceuticals. So you've got there's an increasing willingness in Congress, and even some kind of statements by President Trump that he wants to go after this problem. So the industry really feels as if it's in a target zone. And when you're in a target zone in Washington, that's when the alliances that people, you know, loosely hold together among different players in an industry sector, they fall apart, because it becomes a matter of just protecting your own, you know, piece of the pie. It becomes more important than just as a team having a team showing. Each chunk is now trying to protect their piece of the pie.
So, Eric, are they literally trying to undercut each other, or are they just trying to emphasize how important they are? And then if they have to spend money or whatever they have to do to continue to curry favors with the people involved, especially those on the Senate and congressional side, then they'll do it.
No, that's what's so interesting about what's going on right now, is that they literally are undercutting each other. They're you know, in private, briefing members of Congress and their staffs. In those briefings, they are explicitly attacking their industry rivals. So, for example, the pharmaceutical benefit management companies are pointing to the health insurance companies and the pharmaceutical branded companies as being, you know, the source of the problem. The pharmacists are pointing to the pharmacy benefit managers as being the source of the problem. And you know, the generics are pointing at the branded companies, and the branded companies companies are pointing at the generics, and they are each passing out their own PowerPoint presentations to the staffers and the lawmakers. They're each having their own fundraisers, and they are really going at each other, you know, with the knives out to basically, you know, at any cost to their rival, as long as my profits are protected.
The story points out the number of lobbyists who are involved almost every single day in multiple ways. Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary that, in fact, the pharmaceutical industry and other related kind of chunks of that sector have more than 1,000 lobbyists. And that means that there are essentially more than 2 lobbyists for every member of Congress. So, I mean, if you're doing a kind of a man-to-man defense and you're a basketball team and you got the lawmaker walking out into the hallway, you know, you've got 2 lobbyists on average that are stationed there ready to pigeonhole the lawmaker or their staffers. They walk from the hallway to vote or whatever it is they're doing. And it's just, you literally just, you go over to Capitol Hill and you walk the halls and you look around and you will run into a pharma lobbyist within a matter of time. It's just a question of how many minutes it takes you to find the pharma lobbyist that's there, working their message, trying to convince the lawmaker that their argument is the right one. And they're not just doing it with their, you know, power of persuasion. They're writing checks. They are writing, you know, millions of dollars worth of campaign contributions to these same lawmakers and helping them get reelected. And those same lawmakers are then taking actions to benefit the companies that are making these big donations.
So with a new administration, and as you pointed out, there's a little uncertainty on which way the Trump administration might go in pursuing trying to lower drug prices. Have these entities, have they had to dramatically change their approach, or no matter the administration, they still need to protect themselves in a certain way, and they're just continuing to do that?
The thing that has shifted, which is interesting, is that there, it used to be more of a debate, you know, about is there a problem, and now essentially the debate is more focused on is to who's to blame for the problem. And I was speaking with a Representative Doggett from Texas, who has long been pushing for change on terms of pharmaceutical pricing and essentially some form of price controls or limitations on prices. And he was offering me that observation that's what he sees has really shifted. And to some extent, that's a good thing, because at least you've moved beyond do we need to do anything to debate over, you know, what's the cause of it and who's responsible, which is at least some sense of progress, even though still with all of those lobbyists and all those campaign contributions, the vested interests have, you know, sufficient clout to largely protect themselves and prevent anything really significant from happening, it appears, in the near term.
Well, let me pick up on that, Eric. For folks who are listening right now, and whether they're buying a small amount and they're bothered by it, or for others who are buying a large amount and it's taking a huge amount of money from them and it's moved up a lot lately, are there any signs they should feel optimistic that something is going to change soon?
There's no signs that I see that the radical change coming in terms of, you know, significant legislative action that will, you know, limit the large increases that are occurring in pharmaceutical prices. I think that what signs I'm seeing are some modest changes on the margins, and that there is at least an impetus to try to do that. And it's likely that there will be some legislation passed this year that will attempt to address some aspects of the problem, but probably on the margins. And that in terms of the extent of the you know, the rising cost of pharmaceutical drugs, the rising deductible amounts that people are having to pay to get their drugs, there's so far there's no significant, you know, kind of systemic solution in sight legislatively right now, and there does not appear to be political willpower to make that happen so far.
So why isn't there political willpower? Because this is one, I mean, I would hope the senators and the congressmen believe in this, but even if it's purely pandering, you can appeal so much to your constituents, especially ones who are more inclined to vote, by saying not only just the lip service that I want to get involved in this, but if you could show tangibly that you were involved in something where there was progress, I can't think of too many other issues that would put you in better position to keep the position you want or to pursue an even higher position.
I mean, lawmakers love to talk about, you know, why high drug prices are a problem and their, you know, determination to address it and how committed they are to addressing it. But then when it comes to actually voting on and passing legislation that would make significant change, the votes just generally speaking are not there. And why is that? I mean, the pharmaceutical industry spends twice as much in the first quarter of 2017 lobbying Congress than any other group in all of the economy. The automakers, the defense contractors, the, you know, I mean, you know, the Wall Street, I mean, yeah, they spend twice as much, and they are a massive force on Capitol Hill, and they donate millions of dollars in campaign contributions, and they get the outcome that they're seeking, which is to protect their interests. And so the members of Congress can put out as many press releases as they want, calling for change, but when it comes to actually voting, so far there hasn't been willpower to do it.
Last thing with Eric Lipton, again, a very accomplished writer, and this story is a concerning read, but it's very informative. Drug lobbyists battle cry over prices, blame the others. EpiPen. Was it about a year ago or so when there was so much scrutiny about the continued pay increase and what was going on? I know recently here in town, Senator Klobuchar pointed out where she believes that customers may have been overcharged by over $1 billion. So on a case like that, and I mean, that's an amazing story. Who knows where that might go? But when we have these large stories that can dominate the news for four or five times about drug prices, EpiPen as an example, does anything then happen? Or is it just, you know, those of us who are, you know, either living our lives or in the media, we pay attention to a little bit, but the overall source to what's going on, that doesn't change because you have so many people involved in wanting to keep the process as it is today.
Again, I think that the EpiPen episode involving Mylan, which is EpiPen at that point was a branded drug, that is part of the reason that we have essentially transitioned from the kind of is there a problem to what's the blame. And in fact, it was during the debate over the EpiPen that the Heather Bresch, who was the CEO of Mylan, was testifying and sort of was pointing her finger at the
yes.
pharmacy benefit managers.
Right.
As being a factor in the escalating price and sort of saying, well, it isn't really just us that is pushing up the price, but it's other players. And so, again, you know, things move slowly in Washington. And so to some extent in the course of history in terms of actually Congress getting ready to do something significant, there has been some progress. And Klobuchar is among the members of Congress that is calling for more significant change. And, you know, and so that to some extent, there is a movement towards action. But again, I'm not seeing, from what my reporting tells me, that there is kind of overwhelming and sufficient support to pass really major change. For example, something like that will allow the Medicare system to negotiate with drug manufacturers over prices like the Veterans Administration does, so that the federal government is the single biggest buyer of pharmaceutical drugs in the United States, but it is actually prohibited under law from negotiating under Medicare to try to get a more competitive price, even though it's the single biggest buyer. Doesn't make much sense, because if you're buying in bulk, you would think you'd be able to get a better price. And if they did, you know, that would affect the whole marketplace if they could sort of put more pressure on the pharmaceutical companies in terms of their negotiating power. But they're prohibited under law from doing that. And there doesn't appear to be movement to, you know, another factor could be importation of drugs from other countries
yeah,
if they're
sure.
manufactured to U.S. standards. Again, the pharmaceutical industry is determined to not let that happen. And there doesn't appear to be significant movement for that to occur. So, you know, those are the kinds of things. There was a proposal to allow a series of experiments with what's called Medicare Part B HHS, Health and Human Services, had proposed at the end of the Obama administration, was going to experiment with ways to reduce the cost of drugs by, you know, changing the way that the drug companies were compensated. The drug industry went into overdrive to get hundreds of members of the House to sign a letter opposing that change. The experiment was canceled even before it started at
yeah.
the end of the Obama administration. So that's the kind of
example.
Clout they have.
Yeah. I got to jump in, sir. We're up against clock. Really important topic. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Eric Lipton from The Times. Your Lindis Construction Time Check is 12:53. Time to stop the water in your basement with LeafGuard brand gutters. Let me talk Father's Day, and let me talk about a great gift for you. Maybe a gift that you buy for yourself or for the father in your life or fathers in your life, Omaha Steaks. Just great food. Reminded of it multiple times when Omaha Steaks recently sent me food, and I've had Omaha Steaks before, and it's great. What about this Father's Day package for $49.99, where you're saving 80%? How do you get it? You go to omahasteaks.com and enter WCCO in the search bar. What do you get? Filets, sirloins, chicken fried steaks, pork chops, burgers, Frank's, meatballs, steakhouse fries, the made-from-scratch caramel, apple tartlets, seasoning packet, more burgers. This can be given to multiple people. Again, 80% off, and the product is phenomenal. Grilling is great on a day like this. How do you get this deal for Father's Day? Limited time. OmahaSteaks.com. Search bar WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.